Tom Lorenz.
And this is the Pop Style Opinion Fest. Hello, kittens. Welcome back to another edition of the PSO. I am the T in your T-Lo, Tom Fitzgerald. And I'm here with the Low in your T-Lo, Lorenzo Marquez, my lovely husband.
Hello.
Happy Pride, Lorenzo.
I know.
The most combative Pride month I've felt in 25 years or so.
Yeah, Lord. Yeah. We usually post pictures, vintage pictures of couples and or people celebrating in a way Pride. I usually do it on Twitter and Instagram, and my God, I've never had a problem, but this year, the first ones I put on Instagram immediately, trollers and hate comments and all that stuff, man. It's just unbelievable.
Yep.
Yeah, it is really bad.
It is really bad. Not that we've spent the last several podcasts talking about the various boycotts and attacks on LGBTQ life, but actually we're going to take a short break from that. We'll have more to say about that during the month of Pride. You're pointing at me.
Yes, I want to add one more thing about the pictures I post on Instagram and Twitter, is that I do my research, because it's very easy to just get pictures of two men holding hands or touching each other or something like that, and you immediately assume that they are queer in a way. But if you know the history of photography, you know that in the past, that's how men used to take pictures. So I do my little research to find out if, you know, and sometimes I get lovely stories about them, and the pictures and the couple and the people in the picture. So I do my very best to make sure that the pictures I get are, you know, let's say close to 100% that they are actually a couple or they are queer, to avoid any confusion or anything like that. Anyway, but we do that every year, and I'm very happy to do it. I'm glad people appreciate them. I think it's a great reminder that we've always been queer.
I agree. In the vein of celebrating Pride, we have some very gay news to report, although you probably already know it since it dropped yesterday to the shock of everyone. Kim Cattrall is returning to the And Just Like That sequel series, or the Sex and the City sequel series, And Just Like That. This is after years of a very public falling out between her and Sarah Jessica Parker, as well as her and, you know, her other co-stars as well. She wasn't getting along with any of them, and she made it very clear in a whole slew of interviews and social media posts, some of which were like shockingly nasty. We talked about it a bit on the podcast at the time, but she made it very clear she's never going back. She doesn't want to deal with those people again. I mean, we talked about this back then when Kim Cattrall's brother died. And evidently, Sarah Jessica reached out in some sort of way to express her condolences. And Kim went to her Instagram and said, "Do not come to me and express your condolences. I don't want to hear it." Like, that's how bad it got.
Right. Yeah. Whatever it is, it's not very clear. But it does feel like that the other ladies were very friends, you know, very friendly and friends with
Sarah Jessica Parker.
And there was something going on.
Well,
there.
I think some of it is just pure good old fashioned actress rivalry. Unlike the rest of the cast, when Sex and the City first, debuted on HBO, Kim Cattrall had a 15-year long movie career at that point. She had a movie career as big or bigger than Sarah Jessica Parker's. And in her mind, she felt like she should be co-star. And there was, you know, there was tension throughout the years on that show between Sarah Jessica and her co-stars in terms of billing, in terms of pay.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah Jessica was an executive producer.
Right.
And in terms of storylines, there was some tension reported at the time, because if you go back and look at the show, Carrie is rarely put in completely humiliating circumstances, but her co-stars always were. Their storylines revolved around humiliating circumstances. And that was rare with Carrie. And her co-stars were also asked to do way more sex scenes than Sarah Jessica ever did. And Sarah Jessica famously never took her top off during the show. All three of her co-stars did.
I think it has a lot to do with that.
Yes.
Because Yeah.
There were disparities.
Yeah.
There.
I mean, yeah. Her character was pretty much a slut, quote unquote slut, you know.
Samantha's.
Yes. And
I think Samantha was put in. It wasn't just that Samantha had these enjoyable sex life, is that when you think about it, a lot of Sam's sex scenes were played for comedy, which over time can be very undignified for a middle-aged actress to be bouncing up and down, you know, topless in scenes that are designed to humiliate her.
And the show made her look like she didn't care about much, a lot of things.
Right.
That it was all about getting laid.
Right.
And which is, you know, you can be a slut and have a...
You can have a healthy sex life and also have a life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. Have a life and have a social mind and political... You know, I mean, all the other things that the other ladies had. Yeah, and I think that it's a lot of that. In fact, when she received her award, she said something about, you have no idea how many men I have to sleep with to get this award, which in a way is, you know,
right,
interesting, because, you know, you can see that as a way like, yeah, I had to go through all this
right
to get this award.
So, I mean, that was always my read on the situation. I am shocked that she's coming back.
I am shocked and kind of disappointed in a way.
Okay.
Because I wish she had said no, no, no forever. But, you know, maybe she got a ton of money. And, you know, you can't say no to several million dollars. So who knows? Who knows?
Right.
She also has a new show coming up. We'll talk about her show later. So maybe she needed the publicity, because that's how it works. Maybe she needed to be
apparently
on the spotlight
again. Well,
apparently
the head of HBO appealed to her directly to come back and do this. And just to fill in the details that were reported, she came back and shot a phone call scene in which no other actors or appear. So she never had to interact with any of the cast members. And the story, the reporting is that it's a conversation between her and Carrie. If you remember last season, they did a lot of texting back and forth.
Yeah, I know.
And we really criticized that at the time because it felt like they were playing on everyone's knowledge of this famous falling out. So they wrote it into the show, and then they had Samantha deliver lines, but without the use of an actress to deliver them.
Right.
And at the time, I felt like they were taunting her. I felt like they were taunting Kim Cattrall, and because the season ended with her calling Carrie, that was like the last shot was Carrie answering the phone. I criticized it at the time. I was like, now Kim Cattrall has to spend the next year or two answering questions about whether she's coming back to this show that she said she was never coming back to. So, do you have any theories as to why she came back? Aside from money, because I think we can agree they must have paid her a fucking truckload of money to come back. But I have a theory.
All right. I think it's money. And I think B, she has a new show coming up. And I think she can use the publicity because everyone was talking about her. I mean, articles and articles about her and the show.
She took the Harrison Ford gambit, which he argued with the producers of the Star Wars sequels. He said, I'll come back and play Han Solo, but you have to kill the character.
Oh.
I think she dies.
Oh, interesting.
Because why have this scene? She's not coming back.
Right, exactly.
So it has to be some sort of final thing. And I think Kim Cattrall would love them to kill off Samantha. She even said this back when they were talking about, she's like, kill her off. Kill Samantha Jones off. I'm done playing her. Or get someone else to play her. I think she said, I'll do it for, you know, however many millions, and you have to kill her.
You know, that makes sense, because what is the point of going through all this trouble to just have one scene?
Exactly. They're going to make up. They're going to have a phone call.
Right.
And I don't know. She'll be sitting there. She was dressed by Pat Field for this scene. And Pat Field famously did not come back. She's always been on Kim Cattrall's side. So she never came back to the show.
Really? I did not know that.
Oh, yeah. So Pat Field dressed her for this scene. And I'm telling you, she's going to be sitting there in a turban or something because she's back in chemo.
Wait.
That's why she's coming back. And
wow.
Then they're going to make up. And then the end of the season will be Carrie getting a text or something that she died. And that's the cliffhanger. And then the season three is all about mourning Samantha.
Oh, dear God.
This is my prediction now.
Oh, God.
The only reason Kim Cattrall came back, aside from money, is because they promised they would kill off Samantha. And, I mean, that is a hell of a storyline. So we'll see.
Wow.
What do you think? Do you think that's far-fetched?
I don't know. But I do make a point here, and you agree with me that there's no point in just having one scene.
No.
You know, like, oh, no. So you have a...
Unless they're screaming and yelling at each other, which they wouldn't do that.
But even so, you're going to have a phone conversation and that's it? Never again?
She's dying.
It makes no sense.
They're killing off Samantha Jones.
Yeah, something. Interesting. Very, very interesting.
Or we find out in the beginning of the season that Samantha died, and then this is like a flashback at the end of the season. Whatever. It airs in the finale, this phone call.
I just love
that. That's
the whole
why
thing.
I think we're going to, the season will end with Carrie finding out that Samantha died.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, I don't know. Maybe as a queer person, Samantha was my favorite character.
Of course. Although Miranda was also, as a queer person, like, I mean, come on, the cynicism, the sarcasm, the lack of trust in men. There was a lot of her that gay men loved at the time.
But Samantha, my God, she had the best lines. She was funny. Everything about her.
Right.
It was just great.
She was such a breath of fresh air. And the other three in retrospect, she is the only character on Sex and the City who has aged well. Like the things that she said back then are even more true now, and a lot of what the other three women were saying back then just has not aged well. It's very objectionable.
Right.
But Samantha was modern and she was forward thinking, and I do think Kim Cattrall had a lot of pride in that. And then I think they made the character silly, especially if you look at the movies.
Uh-huh.
That's where she finally tapped out, because in the like she had that horrible Lawrence of Arabia. Remember that horrible line in the second movie?
And
I remember cringing. I was like, they're making her... Like, that's a Beavis and Butthead line. It's okay to be a woman and a middle-aged or senior woman who loves sex and thinks about it all the time. There's nothing wrong with that. But making stupid 14-year-old jokes about sex is just robbing her of any dignity.
And I think towards the end, like I forget exactly what season, they became very judgmental of her.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like everything she did. I mean, I remember like there's a...
And the whole series ended with all of them paired off with basically husbands except for Samantha.
Yeah. There's the UPS guy scene. I don't know if you remember.
Yeah, everyone remembers that scene where she's giving the UPS driver a blowjob.
Yeah,
but... I mean, they handled it well.
Yeah, but
got to make her point.
Yeah, but my point is that, you know, that scene was kind of uncomfortable because, again, it was... Sarah Jessica Parker, Carrie, you know, judging her.
Right. I remember that and it just doesn't age well now, where Carrie turned 35 and she's like, ladies, we got to start putting it away. We can't be... Remember she got really judgmental about other women's, how they dressed and everything? All of that stuff has not aged well at all. But Samantha, she's still a champion for, you know, sexual freedom and non-judgment. So I hope Kim gets everything she wants out of it.
I hope she did. We're
going to cover the show just like we did first season. We're going to recap it on our podcast every week. I have to admit, the trailer, it looked pretty good.
I don't like some characters, some of the characters.
But we'll see. At least everyone looks better than they did last season. They've got Miranda back in her red hair.
Yeah, it's more fashion now.
Yes, but it's no Patfield. Anyway, speaking of fashion, we should be talking about Bombas socks. Summer is better with Bombas. Their thoughtfully designed clothes make you feel effortlessly at ease, from breezy tagless tees to second skin soft underwear to perfectly cushioned sweat-wicking socks. I know, I talk about the socks all the time, but the underwear and the t-shirts are amazing as well. As the weather gets warmer, Bombas is inviting you to get outside and find your outer peace in socks, underwear, and t-shirts you can effortlessly move and relax in all season long. Bombas makes clothing designed for warm weather, from soft breezy layers you can move in with ease to socks that wick sweat and cushion every step. Socks, underwear, and t-shirts are the number 1, 2, and 3 most requested items in homeless shelters. That's why for every comfy item you purchase, Bombas donates another comfy item to someone in need. Every item is seamless, tagless, and effortlessly soft. Bombas are the clothes you'll want to get dressed and move in every day. Their no-show socks are made with breathable yarns for a barely there feel, plus silicone grips and a contour design to prevent slipping down or sliding around. As always, I wear them every day when I go to the gym, and then when I come home, I'll put on a fresh pair. I usually go through 2 pairs a day. That's how much I love my Bombas socks. And Bombas is 100% 100% happiness guarantee means you're covered for life. Reach out anytime to their happiness team for easy returns, exchanges, or replacements. So far, Bombas has donated over 100 million items, and each purchase adds to that impact. So go to bombas.com/TLO and use code TLO for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/TLO and use code TLO at checkout. That's bombas.com/TLO. Code TLO.
I agree. I always
thank you, Bombas.
I always talk about their fit, that it's so important, especially when you have an item so close to your body, like your socks or your underwear, your undershirt or t-shirt. And they're just perfect. Absolutely perfect.
Agreed.
So yeah, highly recommend.
Do you have anything more to say about Kim Cattrall?
I just hope she made a lot of money and then that she's happy with whatever, because, you know,
I mean, maybe they're somehow talking her into coming back permanently, but I sincerely doubt it. And as you noted, she has a show that's dropping
right
the same week that season two of And Just Like That premiere. She's got a show dropping on Netflix, which we'll be talking about that show when it comes out as well. But yeah, I hope everybody got what they want out of it. I sincerely hope they paid her an insane amount of money for this.
They gave her whatever she asked for.
Yeah.
You know, maybe
that's why I think they killed her off. They're killing off Samantha. So she won't be asked anymore. That's just it. It was the same. It was exactly why Harrison Ford went back to play Han Solo again. Is I'll do it once, kill him off. Don't ask me to play this character again. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Second bit of gayness is, it's a little gay controversy that's kind of a harmless one. The Little Mermaid has come out this month, and, Melissa McCarthy is, currently starring, in the highly anticipated role as Ursula the Sea Witch. Personally, I felt her casting wasn't particularly imaginative.
Really?
They saw a plus-sized actress, and they was like, all right, well, she can play, you know, the fat Disney witch. The thing is, Melissa McCarthy is pretty. She's a very pretty woman,
gorgeous,
and she has
actually
pleasant features. Mm-hmm. So,
yes.
And the thing is, I'm talking to a brick wall here, because I know Lorenzo has never watched The Little Mermaid. I'm sure you haven't watched it. But the Ursula in The Little Mermaid is an extreme, like a lot of Disney witches, is extreme in her presentation. She has an extremely sort of evil present, you know, like Cruella de Vil or Maleficent. She has this over-the-top affect to her. And she, you know, not to put too fine a point on it, she wasn't just like she wasn't plus size. Like, she was a squid. She was enormous in the movie. And that was part of her power. That was part of what made her fearful. And you could even argue, because she was so confident and so focused on her own body, that there was a certain bit of body acceptance in that character. There was not, I mean, she was never made the butt of a joke for being a large female presenting creature. I hesitate to say woman, because she was part squid. Famously, Ursula in the cartoon, which came out in like 1988, was based on, and you can see it, you can absolutely see it, was based on the face of Divine, the iconic drag queen. Her makeup, her eyebrows, her eyeshadow, everything is extremely exaggerated. And if you ever read our book about the history of drag, that's one of the things that Divine really brought to the mainstream of drag. Is prior to that, drag was female impersonation drag. It was people trying to look like Marilyn Monroe and Elizabeth Taylor Judy Garland. And Divine, he came out of this more punk inspired era, of course, being part of the John Waters trash cinema era of the 70s, where it wasn't about mimicking femininity, it was about exaggerating it to extreme, sometimes disturbing proportions.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So Ursula was in some ways a revolutionary Disney witch, because she embodied all of these things like body acceptance and queerness. You know, there was a queer undertone to her presentation. And then you have someone like Melissa McCarthy, who is just the epitome of the pleasant white cisgender lady. So I was like, yeah, okay. There was a bit of a minor hubbub when she was cast, because everyone said, and I firmly agree, like, there are 24 drag queens that could do that role. Like, Jinx Monsoon would have fucking killed.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine?
Killed.
Amazing.
There's video of Jinx singing Poor Unfortunate Souls, which is Ursula's one big song, and she nails it. She nails it. And I have seen Melissa McCarthy's version of the song, and I'm like, this is pleasant. She looks so pleasant. She's moving so gracefully. Mm-hmm. And in the animated version, she is overwhelming. She's overbearing. There are parts where she's absolutely terrifying. And every movement is so exaggerated because you can do that with an animated character, and a human can't mimic that. So I'm not trashing The Little Mermaid, but because I haven't seen it. And from what I can tell, Halle Bailey is amazing in it. She looks stunning. Her voice is gorgeous. But I've seen clips of Melissa McCarthy, and I'm just like, yeah, no human being could ever do what that character is required to do. She's superhuman in every way. Anyway, long story short, very long story. When images of her started getting released in her full Ursula makeup, my first reaction, I was like, that's it? That's the final makeup? Or did they tweak it in digital or whatever? Because the first images released were her sitting in the makeup chair. And the eyebrows are crooked and they're gray.
Yeah.
And she's got green eyeshadow, which fine, but that's not really what she looked like in the cartoon. And the way, the shape of her eyeshadow, it doesn't follow the contour of her occipital, you know, it doesn't do anything. It's just this weird, none of it works, and it's too pretty. It's basically pretty makeup when it really should be overwhelming, and it should be so heavy. All I can think of is when you cast Angelina Jolie as Maleficent, there really isn't much you need to do because she already has the proportions of a Disney. I mean, she looked like her.
Right, right. And it's even a different kind of witch.
They put her in prosthetics. They still exaggerated her cheekbones to make her look more evil, to make her look more gaunt. And I wish they had done something like that with Melissa McCarthy. Now, the reason we're talking about this is because it became a little cause celeb. There was so much blowback about this, and so many people online were saying it should have been a queer makeup because a makeup artist is not queer.
No, his name is Peter Swords King. He's got
a very impressive... he did The Witches. He did Mary Poppins Returns. He did the Star Wars movies and the Pirates of the Caribbean.
He's a great makeup artist.
But this required... It didn't necessarily... And it became... He had to release a statement. He did an interview where he said he was offended that people were complaining that he wasn't queer. And, you know, he has a point. The idea, I would never say that you have to put a queer person in the makeup, you know, trailer to do that. But for Ursula specifically, he talked about it. I read an interview where he was like, yeah, I wasn't going to do drag. I wasn't. And I was like, well, you're missing the point then.
Yeah. I mean, he gave several interviews and he, you know, various statements, but it boils down to he meant to look bad. That, you know, uneven eyebrows and all that. That's what he said.
No.
But it just didn't work.
It's unimpressive.
And if you look at the picture, it's very basic eyebrow and lipstick, and that's it. There's nothing else. Very basic,
pretty lady makeup. Her eyes are, except for the slight exaggeration of her eyeshadow, it's basic pretty lady makeup.
Right.
And that's not Ursula. Ursula should be scary.
Right, right.
And she, of all the Disney witches, honestly, she is the one above all that should be done up like a drag queen because she was inspired by one. And on screen, that's her look. Her look is so extreme.
Right.
So all I want to say is I can understand why he would be offended that people are saying that they should have fired him and put a queer man in there or whatever. But he needed to embrace the draggy parts of that makeup. And for him to dismiss it that way, I'm like, well, that you sound like a straight man who doesn't get it. That's basically what you sound like.
I think it's a bad take. It reminds me a little bit of when Selma Hayek did Frida Kahlo, that she didn't want to do the eyebrow, you know, like kind of thing.
Right,
like,
right, right.
When the actor, you know, kind of makes the decision because they don't want to look like they don't want to look a certain way.
Right.
And he did say that you know he wanted it to still look like Melissa, which is a mistake. I mean, you're playing a character. Still look,
she's not. Yeah. It's not Melissa McCarthy. It's supposed to be Ursula the Sea Witch.
Right. I mean, you embrace the character, and you're no longer yourself as an actor.
Right.
So you just have to go with it.
Silly to me because I've seen all the other mermaids that are in this movie, all the other underwater mermaids, and they really go for these super glam Barbie doll looks for these mermaids. So why did you pull back on the evil character, Disney? Disney witches are known for their looks. They each have such distinctive looks, and those looks generally embody our idea of what evil tends to look like. I just am so frustrated. But I'm not even going to see this movie. But even before this controversy erupted, I was frustrated. I was like, I can't believe they didn't put her in drag makeup. Go ahead.
I think it has a lot to do with that, not to make her look ugly or, you know, afraid to people. Maybe they thought, well, they're going to make fun of her if she looks too...
Well, that's a misunderstanding of the character.
I agree. And maybe have drag queens to consult some drag queens, you know.
There are plenty of non-drag makeup artists in the industry. I mean, drag is such a popular form of makeup is worn by women as much as it's worn. And, you know, it's worn by real people, not just performers. There are plenty of makeup artists, high-ranking makeup artists, who know exactly how to do drag makeup. It's in their portfolio. So... I don't think this guy necessarily doesn't know how to do it. He made a conscious choice not to. And it reeks of Disneyism to me. It's like trying to strip anything remotely queer inflected.
I agree. I think now he's just defending himself with, you know, he got a lot of backlash and hate comments and, you know, as usual, which is not pleasant.
No, and I'm not trashing the film. Like I said, Halle Bailey seems like she's amazing in it. It's not for me. I'm probably not going to see it. So whatever. I just was extremely disappointed when I saw that makeup. And I didn't so much say, oh, you can tell a straight man did it, as, oh, you can tell they didn't realize it was supposed to be drag. That's my thought.
Yeah, he talks about being inspired by the 50s, you know. And
all of that sounds like, what? What are you talking about?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like just an excuse to, you know, justify what he did. But it didn't work. Bottom line, didn't work. And maybe it was a decision. They both decided to go that way, you know, not just him. And I don't know. But did she say anything? I don't know. I don't remember.
Melissa McCarthy, as far as I know, I don't know.
I think she stayed.
I mean, the eyebrows were crooked. And they defended it. They said it was deliberate. They also did the eyebrows were gray instead of black. I'm like, what?
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 Anyway.
Like, they were so afraid to go extreme with it. And the whole point to Ursula's look is that it's extreme. She has tentacles, for God's sake. Trying to put a pretty face on that is silly.
I know. They spent $150,000 on Halle Bailey's wig, but they couldn't do a proper makeup.
I meant to bring that up. And they got her hair right. Like, every penny of $150,000 you can see on screen, her hair looks amazing. But you're exactly right. If you're going to invest that kind of money into Halle Bailey's hair, why couldn't you do a little bit more with Melissa's makeup?
I know. Anyway.
This is probably the gayest conversation we've had in some time. Moving on to our final topic of the day, of the week, is the HBO series Somebody Somewhere just concluded its second season, just got renewed for its third season. And all of that happened in a timely manner because I had heard about this mm-hmm. show for a long time and always meant to put it on my rotation, but our friend David, hi David.
Hello David.
Because I know he listens, told us this week, he's like, you guys got to watch this show. And we had an opening to do so. So we binged the whole two seasons, which it is extremely easy to do because they're all there's only seven episodes per season. Right. So there's 14.
Not total. Enough.
And they're only about a half hour long. They are the easiest binge you will ever, ever have.
True.
If you don't know the show, I'm going to make a comparison here that's both a good one and a bad one. It in many ways is a spiritual successor to Schitt's Creek. However, it's Schitt's Creek if you pull all of the whimsy out of it and all of the more extreme characters out of it and you ground everyone's problems in the real world.
Right.
So it doesn't have that forced sense of silliness that Schitt's Creek has, but it is a relatively small community of quirky people just working their way through life. It is not plot heavy at all. In fact, we're going to talk about both seasons, and I'm not really particularly worried too much about spoiling stuff for you, which I won't. Not anything major, but it's not that kind of show. There's very little to spoil. It's really just a group of very likable people going through their lives.
Right.
That's it.
Right. I think the beauty of the show is that you laugh because not just because the line is funny, but it's the whole situation. It's where they are.
Right.
You know, it's the moment, the whole thing. That's why everything is so funny. And the chemistry, my God. First of all, they're all amazing actors. Very, very talented. And the chemistry is just crazy.
Let me just do the setup.
Right.
Explain what the show is about for people who haven't watched it. It is set in Manhattan, Kansas, and it is the central character is Samantha, who was played by Bridget Everett. Bridget Everett is a popular comic and cabaret performer. She's been a part of the downtown scene in New York for years now, and she's done specials. She's been on TV before. She is big and she is boisterous and she overtakes the screen and every scene that she's in, but that is the point of Sam. Sam is, she's in this, in Manhattan, kind of, I don't know if she returned, she did return. It's where she grew up because her sister died. So she's dealing with a lot of grief in the opening of the show. And she has another sister who lives in town, lives in the area with her, and her parents have a farm in the area. So she's surrounded by her origins, but you can tell she's very adrift. And then she befriends Joel, who they actually went to high school together, but she doesn't even remember him. He clearly idolized her from high school. Local gay man.
Oh, my God.
And the two, it's really largely about the two of them navigating their friendships and their expectations for the world.
Right.
Especially in Sam's case, she's carrying so much pain from so many different things. And she's put up all these walls and traps. She sets all these traps for the people that she loves, and she has a tendency to cut them out of her life. And that's her story. That's essentially her story, is someone who's confident. She's also a very talented singer, so they give her a chance to sing almost every episode. She's full of confidence. She can overtake any scene that she's in, but Bridget Everett is really good at showing you the underlying complete lack of confidence that colors everything that she does. Her uncertainty and her pain is in every line reading.
And because she's loaded with confidence, at least that what comes across.
Bravado, yeah.
Yeah, she's perfect to play those characters because she just goes there. You know, she's not afraid to look silly or ugly or whatever.
Right.
She just does her thing. And she's amazing. She's really, really talented.
She really
is. Very, very funny. Jeff Hiller, my God, Jeff
Hiller.
Plays
Joel, the gay best friend.
Oh, my God.
And you know, the gay best friend is such a cliche, but he's not a cliche.
Oh, my God. He's not a cliche. He reminds me of some of my friends I had in the past living in a small town. You know, it's just, and he plays that so well that, you know, that gay guy from a very, very small town.
Manhattan's not that small.
Well,
it's like 60,000 people, it's not a mecca for gay people. Let's put it that way.
Right. And someone who decided to stay back and live his life there.
Lived in a world that is not entirely built for him.
And somehow you manage to carve, you know, a space and you're there. You live there. When, you know, we always hear about most gay men or queer people moving out and going to the big cities to live their lives and, you know, build a career and so on. He's one of those queer people.
Similarly, one of my favorite characters on the show is Fred Rococo, who is a trans man.
Yes, yes.
Played by the iconic, New York drag king, Murray Hill. I mean, I've known about Murray Hill since I think the 90s, but I've never seen him act before. And he's
amazing.
Great.
Amazing.
What a great amazing character Fred is. What a great performance Murray gives. And there are a couple of times where Fred, if Murray was a different kind of performer and if the writing on Fred was a little not as good as it is, he would come off as like this magical queer person who comes in and basically listens to everyone and solves their problems and always has the answers. Fred, I think, avoids that because there's not a lot of stereotypes surrounding Fred. Fred is Fred is doing Fred. He's himself. He's not some sort of, I really don't want to take anything away from what Murray Hill is doing, but he's not, he's not waving a trans flag or making that much of a part of his character or his, it's not
no,
what he,
I think,
you know I, what I mean? Like he, they yeah. acknowledge the queerness of it, especially later in the series when there's a romance, right. And that's all I'll say about that.
I think that's why he does such a phenomenal job, because I think he chose to play that character that way.
Just a regular guy.
And I think, you know, the underline here is that, I don't know, it's just the way I feel about the character is that, you know, Fred, the character, chooses to live that way or to speak that way or to, you know,
right.
present himself that way, because it's sort of like a self-defense kind of mechanism in a way.
Maybe.
That, you know, you just, here's
a version of myself.
This is a version of myself. This is a version I feel comfortable with. And,
right.
and this is me.
Right.
And Murray does a phenomenal job playing that. I mean, I love the character. It's one of those things that when he starts playing his character, I just sit there and just...
He's great in every single
scene.
Yeah,
I just watch him play this character because it's so beautiful.
There is, without spoiling too much, there is a gay romance that unfolds in season two. And it's genuinely one of the sweetest things I've ever seen. I know that everyone talks about... David and I can't remember his husband's name on Schitt's Creek and how lovely that courting was. And this is even gentler than that. Possibly because it's not too like
it's less pin showy. Up
good looking
yeah,
young
less
men.
Showy in a way.
It's not, you know, it's two local men and one of them's not particularly young. And I just was charmed as hell by the way they were portrayed, by the way they're attraction was portrayed in a very, very non-cliched way.
Right. I think
in a way that pays tribute to a whole swath of queer people out there who don't get represented all that much.
Right. I think the great thing about shows like Somebody Somewhere is that they clearly cast these people because they are extremely talented.
Right.
Yeah. And that makes such a huge difference.
Right.
Instead of the pressure to cast certain people, and then it doesn't work.
And they look like, I know this is a cliche, but they look like real people.
They look like real people.
They look
people.
Like people
they
you see in
like
the parking lot of your Walmart.
Listen,
mean, that's what they look like.
Jeff Hiller, I can't say enough about the man. He's so funny, so
right.
deep, so amazing. I was so in love with him that I just went and Google everything I could find about him, interviews with him and stuff. And then I went to his Instagram page and he's hilarious.
He's really funny.
He's been so funny.
He was part of the Upright Citizens Brigade. He's been doing a lot of that.
I mean, if you go to his IMDb page.
Yeah, it's all like The Office and Parks
like
and Recreation and yeah.
Ton of things.
Yeah. I also want to give a shout out to Mary Catherine Garrison.
Oh my God,
plays,
yes.
Sam's sister, Trisha Miller. And she's, I don't want to get into
that.
I know what you're laughing
no.
at because if you haven't seen the show, no. her character produces something that becomes iconic. And
it's
if
hilarious.
You know what I'm talking about, you know what I'm talking about. But I'd rather
you
discover that
surprised.
On
yeah. yeah. Like I would.
Pardon me. But she, you know, she is, she starts off as a cliche, the bitchy, judgmental married sister who's homophobic. And they really sort of put that character through the ringer. And I think Trisha Mary Catherine actually finds the humanity in a character that could be a sitcom cliche because she's just this, she's a Karen. She's a total live, laugh, love kind of Karen who's very sour and very judgmental of other people. And I got to say, by the end of the second season, I was absolutely in love with her character in the journey she had gone on. And it wasn't some like... First off, that character would never, ever talk about it in terms of a journey. And it wasn't some grand... there were no revelations. She's still the same impatient, judgmental woman she always was. But you really got to see... And this is true of all of them. And I've said this about shows like Ted Lasso and Schitt's Creek. And this show is somewhat in that vein without being so saccharine about it. But it's a very humane show where everybody is allowed to be just... who they are as a character, and they're not forced into boxes, and they look like real people, and their problems are real. Their problems are like finding a job and ongoing depression and their inability to form friendships and that sort of, it's all, I wouldn't call it low stakes, but it's relatively low drama. And most of the revelations or the changes or the journeys that these characters go on are internal, and we see the end results of them. And that's generally how life is. Most of us don't sit around talking out our feelings. And this brings me to one of the other things I love about it is there are endless scenes of the characters just getting drunk. And there's nothing judgmental about that. If anything, I actually love, there's one scene where they're all in Fred's party bus. And he has this party bus with a disco ball in it and everything. And Sam and Joel, the two best friends among everybody else, are absolutely doubled over laughing over something. And there are so many scenes like that. And at one point, Joel says, "This is church." And she starts howling and she's like, "Yes, this is church. This is church." And I was like, I know that's a jokey scene, but that's actually profound, because that is the show's understanding of people, is that there is sort of something holy in our friendships and in our interactions with each other. And those things should be sanctified. Yes, so
yes.
It's lots of scenes of them just being friends, wisecracking and riffing off each other on a couch the way you would with your friend.
Right.
And the scenes go on too long and they don't really reveal anything, but they feel so real. It's right. Just people in kitchens riffing and making jokes.
And the things, you know, they say, I'll never forget, there's a scene where they go, the sister invite Sam and Joe for dinner. And they have the dinner, and it's just this awkward, horrible dinner. And then they go back, and I'm like, oh my God, I need a drink after that dinner.
Right, right, right.
And the line is just perfect and real, because that's what you do in real life.
Right.
You know, like, go home and like, my God, I need a drink. That was horrible. It's just like that. It's just very, very funny. But yes, you're right. Trisha is freaking amazing.
She is. She's there isn't a character I dislike. Not even the poor. I mean, the mother is a mess.
The New York Times, the New York, I'm sorry, magazine, wrote an article about the show, and they described Trisha as a glass of lemon water that thinks
she's lemonade. Lemonade. I saw that quote.
And it's just perfect.
It is perfect.
Because that's exactly how she is. Anyway.
It's just a really good sort of slice of life TV show. It's not high stakes in terms of its drama, but I cried at least four times watching it.
Right, right.
It's gentle in the way, like I said, in sort of the way that Schitt's Creek and to a lesser extent Ted Lasso is, but
oh my God,
they go through darkness of the soul moments. So the show doesn't get too sweet. It really acknowledges how fucking hard it is to be in the world and how lonely that can be sometimes, and how much we self-defeat each other. Like we just lay our own traps for each other. And then it turns around and says, but you know, if you just have martinis in the kitchen with your friend,
that's the thing,
you can survive all of this.
The show shows you how we underestimate those little moments.
Exactly.
Like, there's very simple I wouldn't say little, but like very simple moments where you interact with your friend, with a family member, and you just have the best time, and it's just, you know, perfect.
Not to give anything away, but you'll know what I'm talking about. The scene where she goes to her sister's grave to play the song for her.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you remember how that
played? Yes, yes.
And I was like, yes, yes. That, I'm not going to give it away, but it leads up to, it's this big thing where, oh, she's going to play the songs that she never let her sister hear while she was alive. And she brings a cassette with her, or a CD with her, and a little boombox. The moment is set up. And
right.
It's not played for laughs, but what happens is like, yeah, well, that's life. That is how it would happen in the real world.
Right.
We don't get these to construct these moments for ourselves. They just have to happen naturally. And like I said, sometimes you're drunkenly laughing with your best friend and the show is telling you, this is church. Right. This is holy. And that is my favorite thing about it.
The only negative thing
there's a couple things.
But, well, for me, the only one negative thing is that the way they handle how, I mean, I'm not giving anything away here. One of the actors died before they started season two. And I just felt that they didn't handle that well. They didn't handle
the character. Write the death in, so they just kept explaining why he wasn't there. Yeah. And it really,
it just didn't work.
It didn't make any sense. The mother was like I said, it's not a plot heavy show, and that's in its favor. However, I think sometimes the plotting really just it loses things. And these are the things that I'm going to list. One is Joel's crisis of faith, which basically lasts both seasons, his whole falling out with the church. I don't think that was ever satisfactorily. If you asked me to explain what that was about, I have no idea.
Right.
They never articulated it, and nobody seemed to respond to it. Like, nobody was like, Joel, what is going on? Like, no one asked him. So it just felt very unwritten.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, like you said, one character just drops out of it, and you just can't. You can't write that character out without the story not making any sense.
No.
And things like, you know, in the very first time you see Trisha, Sam's sister, she unloads on her and she says some ugly homophobic shit. So you're like, all right, this is the bigot sister. And then that gets completely dropped.
Right.
And then they soften her almost immediately. And like I said, they put that character through some shit, but there is some major inconsistencies in the beginning as to how she's written. And then this is just minor stuff, but, you know, the family owns a farm. All of season two, her parents were not at the farm for various reasons. And yet they would go and, oh, we have to go feed the chicken. And I'm like, and they talk about it like it's something they do once a week. And I'm like, well, no, a farm, it was a working farm. They made that clear in season one. Who's working that farm?
Right, right.
It was just little things like that that sort of build up over time where the characters feel like they're just living in a bubble and there's not much thought as to... The other thing is, I don't know how anyone feeds themselves or pay their bills. Their employment situations are so hazy,
right,
and they have all this free time, and yet they're always going out for drinks and stuff like that. And, you know, this stuff is not a deal breaker for me in any way, but it is one flaw of the series overall is that they have created a devastating, real emotional space for these characters. That part works. The actual world they live in doesn't entirely make sense. But right. Then again, I would say the same thing about Schitt's Creek and Ted Lasso. Maybe that's the point.
Right.
Is that you have to place these characters in slightly unrealistic, undefined situations.
You don't get enough episodes. There's only seven. And you only get 30 minutes.
Right.
You know, there's not enough time.
But it's a great little summer binge because... the entire two seasons it's 14 episodes. So it's 7 hours long. And like I said, you'll cry gently. You'll laugh a lot. You'll hear some great music, but it will not wring you out emotionally. So it's a great weekend binge.
I agree.
Tear through the whole thing. You will fall in love with at least one of those characters, if not all of them. And yeah, I highly recommend it. They're coming back for season three, and I have a feeling, a lot of people are going to discover that show between season two and season... You're just going to be hearing more and more about
it. Right, like we did.
Before season three comes, especially because, you know, HBO has lost a lot of their... Not that this is a prestige show on the level of Succession. It's not... Oh God, it's not even trying to be that. But, you know, they're looking for buzzworthy shows, and I think the buzz on this one is about to get a little bit hotter.
No, I agree. It's sort of like Hack in a way, you know.
Hacks.
I'm sorry. Yeah, you know, kind of like that.
Yeah.
That type of show.
It got more popular in season two.
Right.
Yeah. Same thing with The White Lotus.
Yes. Exactly.
Suddenly, it was the hottest thing on television in the second season. So, that is. I always get it wrong. Is it someone somewhere or somebody?
Somebody somewhere.
Somebody somewhere. I always get it wrong. That somebody somewhere on HBO. Highly recommended. Let us know what you think of it. And if you have already seen it, would love to hear what your thoughts are on some of our criticisms.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's it for this week, correct?
Yes, we're done.
And we will be back next week with whatever crosses our eyes across our desks. Until then, please take care of yourselves. Go out and get some sun on your face.
Yes, it's beautiful out.
Love you, mean it. Bye-bye.
Bye.